You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. The complete works of Tacitus, to which are prefixed political discourses upon that author, edited and translated by Thomas Gordon, with introductory essays by Thomas Gordon. Volume 1, Introduction and Dedication. To the Right Honourable Sir Robert Walpole, First Commissioner of the Treasury, Chancellor and Under-Treasurer of the Exchequer, one of His Majesty's Most Honourable Privy Council, a Knight of the Most Noble Order of the Garter. Sir, as you were the first who promoted the following work in a public manner, I take liberty to present it to the public under your name, and to do an act of acknowledgement for one of generosity. Be pleased to be the patron of a book which under your patronage was composed. It is natural and common for men who profess letters to seek the countenance and protection of men of power, and from such of them as to greatness of fortune were happy enough to join greatness of mind, they have not sought in vain. Power without politeness and complacency is at best distasteful, often hated, amiable when it knows how to condescend. It is thus that men in high stations avoid envy from such as stand below them. He who cannot rise to their height finds a sort of retaliation and amends in their coming down to him. No man is pleased with the behaviour which represents him as contemptible. To make us think well of ourselves by another showing us that we are well thought of by him is a generous and artful civility, a lesson which stately and rebuking men want to learn. A mean man of great quality and figure, for such incongruities we often meet, teaches others to scorn him by his showing that he scorns them. Affability, therefore, accompanied with good sense, which will always guard it from exceeding, is the art of keeping great splendour from growing offensive to the rest of the world. It must be owned that no affability, even the most flowing, no genius, even the most elevated, can escape particular distastes, and from the dislike of persons to that of actions, the transition is easy and too common. Men do not easily discern good qualities and intentions in one to whom they do not wish well. All men, even those of the most unexceptionable characters, are apt to form their judgment over hastily when their passions are warmed, and from this cause it has often proceeded that the inevitable misfortunes of times and accidents have been charged upon such whose interest and study it was to prevent them. This is one of the evils and uneasinesses inseparably attending every administration. When a state is under heavy burdens and difficulties, the means to relieve and support it will be almost always proportionably heavy, and as whatever proves heavy however necessary, is easily called oppression. So the hand which administers a remedy may merely, because it is felt, be easily styled oppressive. Besides the reason which I have already given for this address, I have another one taken from the character of my author, as he was a man of affairs, a great minister. I choose to represent him to another, to one who, having been long engaged in public life, having had long experience of men, seen far into their bent and foibles, and being conversant with the mysteries and primary operations of government, can thus readily judge whether Tacitus has refined too much in his politics, or been over-severe in his censures upon mankind, or whether this charge has not been chiefly raised by men of speculation, who, however furnished with learning, were yet unacquainted with the transactions of states, and ignorant of human nature, or perhaps willing to do honour to it, or to themselves at the expense of truth. Men are to be known not by theories taken up in closets, but by commerce with men, and best of all in those great scenes of public life where you, sir, have sustained for so many years a high and important part, and gained eminent experience as well as the just opinion of great sufficiency. I could here, agreeably to the usual style and purpose of dedication, say a great many advantageous things, without risking the usual censure incurred by dedicators, but such things I would much rather say of you than to you. In this place, I shall only profess to be what I entirely am, with perfect truth and high regard. Sir, your most obliged and most obedient humble servant, T. Gordon. End of the introduction.
Section 1 of the Complete Works of Tacitus, edited by Thomas Gordon. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Father Ziley, Detroit, Michigan. The Complete Works of Tacitus, to which are prefixed political discourses upon that author, edited and translated by Thomas Gordon, with introductory essays by Thomas Gordon. Volume 1, Discourse 1, upon the former English translations of Tacitus. Section 1 of the translation by Greenway and Sir H. Saville. I'm going to offer to the public the translation of a work which, for wisdom and force, is in higher fame and consideration than almost any other that has yet appeared amongst men. A work often translated into many languages, seldom well into any, into ours worst of all. The first was done in Queen Elizabeth's reign, the Annals by one Greenway, and four books of the history by Sir Henry Saville, a man exceeding learned, and esteemed for his critical notes upon Tacitus, as well as for those upon St. Chrysostom, of whose works he has published an elaborate edition. But though he was an able grammarian, and understood the antiquities in Tacitus, and his words, his translation is a mean performance. His style is stiff, spiritless, and obscure. He drops many of his author's ideas, preserves none of his turns, and starves his meaning even where he best conveys it. 'Tis a mere translation, that rather of one word into another than that of a dead tongue into a living, or of sense into sense. The Roman idiom is forced and wire-drawn into the English, a task altogether impossible, and not adopted and naturalized, a thing possible enough. And out of a book profuse in eloquence, fine spirit and images, he has drawn a work harsh, halting, and barren. Ogilby is not more unlike Virgil. Greenway is still worse than Saville. He had none of his learning, he had all his faults and more. The former has at least performed like a schoolmaster, the latter like a schoolboy. Section 2 of the English translation by several hands. About 100 years after them, another English translation was undertaken by several hands, Mr. Dryden and others. Dryden has translated the first book, but done it almost literally from Mr. Amelot de la Houssaye, with so much haste and little exactness, that besides his many mistakes, he has introduced several Gallicisms. He follows the French author servilely, and writes French-English, rather than trust him out of his eye. It is true, La Houssaye is an honest translator, and one of the foremost. He has gone as far as the 13th annal inclusive, but his phrases are often weak and trifling, and he is subject to all that faintness and circumlocution for which the French tongue is noted. Dryden copies his manner as well as his meaning. It was pure hurry and want of application, for he was a fine writer, had a copious imagination, a good ear, and a flowing style. Strike away all that is bad in his works, enough will remain to show him a great poet, a man of parts, and a master of language. Even his many enemies and opposers show the considerableness of the man. But his excellencies in many things excuse not his faults in others. His translation of Tacitus is poor and languid, nowhere derived from the original, generally full of mistakes. At best, it is only the French translator ill-translated or ill-imitated. Section 3. Of the last translation of the first annal. Tacitus, talking of the latter end of Augustus, his reign, says, Domi res tranquillae, eadem magistratum vocabula. These are two sentences independent of each other, yet Mr. Dryden translates, quotes open, all things at Rome being in a settled peace, the magistrates still retain their former names, quotes closed, as if the one was all the cause of the other. This blunder is owing to La Houssaye ill understood. Tout etoit tranquille à la Rome, les magistrats avouent les mêmes noms. If instead of avouent he had said ayant, the translation would have come pretty near the French, but the English translator does not seem to understand French, though he has no other guide, else how could he so miserably mistake pars multo maxima imminentis dominos variis rumoribus disserebant, as to render it, quotes open, the greater part employed their time in various discourses of future matters, quotes closed. From this it is plain he never looked into the original, or understood it not. He was misled by the French, which he appears here to have as little understood. La plus par les paysans a faire divers usgemens de cruqui alloent devenu lui matre. But more wretched still is what follows. Tacitus represents the Romans discoursing during the decline of Augustus concerning the next successors in view, Agrippa, Postumus, and Tiberius, and makes them say of Livia the empress, accedere matrem muliebri impotentia serviendum feminae, etc. Quotes open, his mother of a violent and imperious nature, according to the sex themselves, subjected to the slavery of a woman. Quotes closed. This is jargon and nonsense, though the author seems to have followed the French. Qui tibere a un mère imperius in violent, selon la coutume du sexe à laquelle il faudra obéir en esclaves. Well may he be said to follow the French translator blindly, and less is the wonder that he adopts his Gallicisms where he happens to understand them. When Drusus, the son of Tiberius, entered the camp of the seditious legions in Pannonia, and the mutinous soldiery were gathered round him, Tacitus makes a charming and strong description of their behavior, with the several vicissitudes of their passions, which shifted strangely according as they dreaded his person and authority, or recalled their grievances, and surveyed their own numbers and strength. And he concludes the whole, according to his custom, with a fine reflection. Ili quotiens oculos ad multitudinem retulerant, vocibus truculentis strepere rursum viso caesera trepidare, murmur incertum atrox clamor et repente quies deversis animorum motibus pavebant terabantque. This is all pretty well translated by La Hussue. I shall only quote the last clause or reflection. Par de movements tu difference ils prenoient le pouvante en la donuent. And this I quote only to show how impotently the English translator hangs by the French phrase and takes it literally. Quotes open. By their different motions, says he, they gave and took terror in their turns. Quotes closed. Is not this pithy and sounding? There are numbers of such instances both as to language and strength, insomuch that I have been sometimes tempted to think it not to be Dryden's, but I have many assurances of it being his. I take it for granted it was a job for the booksellers, carelessly performed by one who wanted no capacity, but only pains or encouragement, to have done it much better, perhaps very well. Section 4 of the last translation of the second annal. The next annal is translated by another hand, less negligently, but with small taste and vigor, no resemblance of the original, where in every sentence almost there occur surprising images and turns which nowhere appear in the translation. Quotes open. 'Tis not the fire of Tacitus, but his embers quenched with English words cold and Gothic. Let anyone read particularly the two speeches of Arminius and Maroboduus to their different armies just before they engaged, chapter 45 and 46, and he will find that between Tacitus and his translator there is just as much difference as between a living soul and a cold carcass. Yet the lifeless translation of this annal, compared with that of the third by a different hand, is an able performance. Section 5 of the last translation of the third annal. This translation is in truth wretched beyond belief. 'Tis below drollery, and a sort of middle between bad sense and good nonsense. Tacitus says of the arrival of the fleet, which brought Agrippina from Asia with her husband's funeral urn, and her children, now fatherless, classis palatim succesit, non alacri ut adsolet remigio sed cunctis ad tristiam compositis. Annals, Book 3, Chapter 1. Quotes open. The fleet, says the translator, came in, not rowing briskly as they used to do, but slowly and with sorrow in their countenances. Quotes closed. A translation worthy of one who could make Tacitus say elsewhere, quotes open, Drusus left the city to inquire his fortune. Quotes closed. Would not one think that he went to some remote country to consult a cunning man? Or meant the translator to joke upon the religion and solemnities of the Romans? The words of Tacitus, which he thus perverts, or rather quite drops, are, Drusus urbe egressus repetendis auspiciis, quotes open, Drusus went without the gates to repeat the formality of the auspices, quotes closed. Tacitus, at the end of his discourse upon laws, says, Caesar Augustus potent leae securus, quae triumviratu userat abolevit, dedique jura quis pace et principe uliremur, bracket, editor, acriera, bracket closed, ex eo vincla inditi custodes et lege papia popea premiis inducti ut si, etc. Sed altius penetrabant custodes scil urbemque et Italiam et quod usquam civium correpuerant multorumque excisi status et terror omnibus intentabatur nisi Tiberius statuendo remedio, etc. Now observe the source and elegance and truth with which this is rendered by the translator. Quotes open. Augustus Caesar, being settled in his authority, he abolished those things he commanded in the triumvirate, and gave new laws to be observed in time of peace and under a monarch. And that they might be the better kept, he appointed some to look after them, quotes closed, as if laws had been a flock of sheep, quotes open, the law Papia Popea provided, etc. But the informers went farther, not only in the city, but through all Italy, where any citizens were, ruined many families, and frightened them all, to remedy which Tiberius, quotes closed, etc. A little farther, Tacitus says, adversus animis acceptum, quod filio Claudii Socer Seianus destinaretur, polluisse nobilitatem familiae videbantur, suspectumque jam nimiae spe Seianum ultro extulisse. Quotes open. There were, says the translator, great discontents upon Claudius' son being to marry Sejanus' daughter as a disparagement to him, bracket open, to what him? Sejanus was the last named, bracket closed, quotes open, but Sejanus, whose ambition was suspected, was much exalted upon it, quotes closed. Tacitus discoursing of the revolt of Florus and Sacrovir, and representing the sentiments of the people upon that and other alarms, says, increpabant Tiberium, quod in tanto rerum moto libellis accusatorum insumerit operam, an Iulium Sacrovirum maiestatis crimine reum in senatu fore, extitisse tandem viros qui cruentas epistolas armis cohiberent miseram pacem vel bello bene multari, tanto impensius in securitatem compositus, neque loco, neque vultu mutato, sed ut solitum per illos dies egit, altitudine animi an comparerat modica esse et vulgatis leviora. Hear how this is translated, blaming, quotes open, Tiberius for employing himself in reading informers' accusations where there was so great commotions. What, said they, have the Senate found Julius Sacrovir guilty of treason? Some have had the courage to suppress by arms the bloody libels of a tyrant. War is a good change for a miserable peace. But he neither changed place nor countenance, affecting to show he was not afraid, either through courage or that he knew things to be less than they were reported. Quotes closed. Was ever good sense so vilely burlesqued? Were one to study, to ridicule Tacitus, what more miserable stuff, void of all sense and sound, could one make him utter? It puts me in mind of a notable compliment in an address from a learned society to the late king. Quotes open, we perceive that you are one that is not afraid that posterity should make mention of you, quotes closed, or words of the like force and beauty. Neither have I picked out these passages invidiously as the worst. I have read the whole annal, and I know no part of it better done. Section 6. Of the last translation of the 4th, 5th, and 6th annal. The 4th, 5th, and 6th annals are done by another hand, and poorly done. In him you find little of the true meaning of Tacitus, of his spirit and manner, nothing at all, but frequent deviations from his sense, and even from all sense. Tacitus, in the character of Sejanus, says, intus summa apiscendi libido, eiusque causa modo largitio, et luxus saepius industria ac vigilantia haud minus noxiae quotiens prando regno figuntur. Who but the translator would have discovered that by these words Tacitus meant to declare that, quotes open, virtues are as dangerous as vices when they meet with a turbulent spirit aspiring to empire, quotes closed. Yet the translation of this passage is as just as that of many others. Sometimes he drops whole phrases and passages, such as he knows not what to make of, and oftener loses out of sight the meaning of others, however plain. Tacitus says, ut series futuri in Agrippinam exitii inciperet Claudia pulcra sobrina eius postulatur accusante Domitio afro. Is ricens praetura modicus dignationis et quoco facinore properus clarescere. Crimen impudicitiae adulterum funium, venificia in principem et devotiones objectabat. Quotes open. To begin the ruin of Agrippina, bracket open, how insipid and defective, bracket closed, Domitius Afer, lately praetor, bracket open, not a word of modicus dignationis, bracket closed, and ready to engage in anything to gain himself credit, observe the force, bracket closed, accuses Claudia Pulchra of adultery with Fernius, bracket open, the words sobrina eius, which explain the rest, and the word impudicitiae, one of the articles of the charge, are omitted, bracket closed, quotes open, and to have a design on the life of that prince with her charms and person, quotes closed. What prince? Fernius was none. Tiberius has not been mentioned in several pages. It is nonsense. And, quotes open, a design on his life with her charms and person, quotes closed, multiplies the nonsense. What follows fares not much better. Agrippina semper atrox, tum et periculo propinquo accensa, pergit ad Tiberium. Quotes open. Agrippina, always of a violent temper, but at present extremely enraged, runs immediately to Tiberius, etc. Quotes closed. He drops periculo propinquae as useless words. Tacitus says that amongst other reasons assigned why Tiberius retired from Rome, some allege the authority assumed by his mother, who, having persuaded Augustus, contrary to his inclinations, to postpone Germanicus and adopt Tiberius, did afterwards upbraid Tiberius with so signal a service, and even challenge the empire as her own. Idque Augusta exprobrabat reposcibat. Quotes open, the empress, says the translator, seemed to reproach him with that favor and requested it for her son. Quotes closed. What gibberish! She had but one son, and he had it. She forsooth reproached her son Tiberius for having given him the sovereignty, and from the same Tiberius claimed it for the same Tiberius. Sejanus, once when a cave fell in upon Tiberius and his company, covered the emperor with his own body. Maior ex eo, says Tacitus. Quotes open, this admirable and undoubted fidelity, quotes closed, says the translator, which Tacitus never said nor meant. How miserably, too, does he translate ingentium bellorum cladem aquavit malum improvisum, eos initium simul et finis extitit. Quotes open, happened a calamity in which we sustained as great a loss as in the greatest defeats, though it was all done in an instant. Quotes closed. I will venture to say that this is as well done as any other part of all the three books. Section 7 of the last translation of the 11th annal. The 11th annal is translated by another gentleman, but not with another spirit. It is like the rest, full of feebleness and mistakes and low phrases. I shall here give some instances. The pleaders, in a speech to the Emperor Claudius, in defense of taking fees, and in answer to Silius, who alleged against them the example of certain great orators of the former age, who had never taken any, say, facile asinium et messalam, inter Antonium et Augustum bellorum primiis refertos, etc. Chapter 7. Quotes open, Asinius and Messala, who feathered their nests well in the civil wars, twixt Anthony, quotes closed, etc. This is the language of a chairman, but of a piece with the rest, such as a king's playing the good fellow, trumping up Arminius' title, being equipped with money. His reputation began to exert itself far and near. He saw but one poor snake, far more bloody than he ought to be. Senator squabbling in the house, a silver mine which bled but a little. It was not come to that yet. Advice hurts not the guiltless. Men had recourse to impudence when their ill actions came to be discovered. Mothers were in the same predicament with them in that matter. Claudius, as he was easily angry, so he was easily pleased. Matrimony, the last comfort of those who give themselves to lewdness. Passadavits of her lewdness, the vast treasures given to Silius for his drudgery, such cant, jargon, and ill-favored nonsense is called the translation of Tacitus. Section 8. Of the last translation of the 12th and 13th annals. The two succeeding annals are Englished by another hand, and miserably Englished they are, rather worse than the former. 'Tis all wretched tittle-tattle, unmeaning and ill-bred, nor could any number of words thrown together at random, without thought or idea, be more shallow or vulgar, more destitute of ornament or sound. To pass by his top orator's knack of speaking, staving off a war anyways, he being rectine, the emperor himself their worthy. Yea, gentlemen and senators do make no other original to themselves but from thence, and the like gibberish which occurs in every sentence. I shall here transcribe a passage where he seems to aim at a meaning and to exceed himself. Quotes open. The power his mother had over him, quotes closed, Nero, dwindled away by degrees, and Nero fell in love with Acte, a freed woman, and made Otho and Claudius Senecio the confidants of his new amour, one of which, to wit, Otho, was of a consular family, but Senecio a son of one of Caesar's freedmen, who at first, without the mother's knowledge, and since, in spite of all she could do, worked himself by degrees into the prince's affections, by luxury and secret ways that nobody knew, which the best friends he had indulged him in, and were pleased to see him take up and content himself with that woman, a thing which did nobody an injury, for he had the misfortune to dislike his wife Octavia, whether it be that we naturally slight what we can have, and eagerly pursue what is forbidden, of an illustrious family, and of an unspotted virtue, and, quotes open, 'twas feared he might fall into a vein of debauching women of quality if he was checked in that intrigue. But Agrippina could not bear that a freedwoman should nose her, quotes closed, etc. That, quotes open, a freedwoman should beard her, quotes closed, says the old translation. How clear, how strong, and how just. This is in the 13th book. Take one or two samples more out of the 12th. Quotes open. 'Twas enacted that if they, women, married to slaves, without their master's consent, they should remain such. Quotes closed. Bracket open. Who should? The women or the slaves? The former were none, and could not remain what they were not, and to say it of the latter is nonsense. Brackets closed. Quotes open. Maria Soranus, consul elect, moved that Pallas, whom Caesar said was the first that brought it into the house, should have the praetorial honors and 15 million sesterces, and that Scipio Cornelius might have the thanks of the house, for that being descended from the king of Arcadia, he forgot his birth and quality to serve the public, and was contented to be one of the prince's servants. Claudius assured them that Pallas, satisfied with the honor the Senate had done him, would live as retiredly as he used to. In short, an act was made, quotes closed, etc. These two passages are as brightly translated as any in the two books, indeed beyond most passages. I shall quote one more. It is in the 13th annal, chapter 26. It was importantly urged in the Senate that such freedmen as by abusing their lords had shown themselves unworthy of their liberty should remain at the mercy of the said lords, and be subject to their former claims, nec de erant qui conserant, says Tacitus, sed consules relationem incipere non ausi ignaro principe, i.e., quotes open, there were senators too ready to have voted for such a decree, but the councils durst not propose it to the vote without acquainting the emperor, quotes closed. Of all this matter, the translator understood not one word. He says, quotes open, neither were there those wanting who could censure them, nec de erant qui censerent, but the consuls durst not, without the emperor's knowledge, determine the matter, quotes closed. I cannot omit one polite phrase more out of this book. Sullius Senecam in Crepans says, Tacitus, quotes open, he laid it in Seneca's dish, quotes closed, says the translator, chapter 42, quotes open, laying it in Seneca's dish, quotes closed, says the old translation. He indeed has stolen all he knew of Tacitus from the old translation, with all its blunders and stupidity, and improved both notably. Behold another specimen, quotes open. At Rome he cheated men of their legacies, and wronged the fatherless who were deluded by him. The words of Tacitus are, Romae testamenta et orbos velut in dagine eius capi, chapter 42. Section 9 of the last translation of the 14th, 15th, and 16th annals. A fresh hand has undertaken the three following annals, and by good fortune such a hand has preserved an eminent uniformity with the foregoing. Only he is somewhat more gross. Tacitus says it was reported that when Agrippina studied to draw Nero, her son, into an incestuous commerce with herself, Senecam contra mulieribus in lecebras subsidium a femina petivisse, emesamque acten libertan. Quotes open, Seneca, says the translator, soon brought in Acte, Nero's beloved woman, to expel one whore with another. Quotes closed. When Agrippina had escaped the first attempt on her life, she dissembled, and seemed not to think it designed, nor to entertain any future apprehensions. Simulata securitate, quotes open, under the appearance of security, quotes closed, says the translator. But as Acheronia, one of her maids, had perished in that attempt, she ordered her will to be found, and all her effects to be sealed up. This she did, says Tacitus, without any dissimulation. Id tantum non per simulationem, chapter 6. Quotes open, she takes all necessary care, says the translator, for the cure of her wound, the testament of Acheronia to be looked out, her coffers to be sealed up, and all things necessary to be done without the least dissimulation. Quotes closed. How nicely he understands the original, and how grammatical is his English. Here, however, there seems to be some meaning aimed at, and what follows, even that is wanting. Quotes open, the image of the villains who were stained with the guilt of this parricide still haunted him. Quotes closed. The words of the original are, observabanturque maris ilius et litorum gravis ad spectus, chapter 10. In truth, to expose the insipidness and nonsense of these annals were to transcribe them. In some places he is so gross that his words will not bear repeating, as particularly where one of Octavia's maids tells Tegelinus, Castoria esse muliebria Octaviae quam os eius. His translation of this is abominable, as well as ridiculous and false, and many such like instances there are in him. I beg leave to quote one short passage more out of this annal. When that lady was by the tyrant divorced and banished into Campania under a guard, inde crebri questus, says Tacitus, nec occulti per vulgam cui minor sapientia, et ex mediocritate fortuna, pauciora pericula sunt, chapter 60. This is a fine reflection. Observe how execrably it is rendered. Quotes open, upon the clamor of the people who have nothing to lose, are commonly fearless, not out of any love of or relenting at his severity. This was remitted, quotes closed. The 15th annal alone is done just like the 14th, wretchedly. Here follows a specimen. Corbulo and Cassianus Paetus commanded in the east. Sed neque Corbulo ae muli patiens, says Tacitus, et Paetus qui satis ad gloriam erat, si proximus aberetur despiciebat gesta, nibil caedis aut praedae unsurpatas nomine tenus urbium expugnationes dictitans, sed tributa ac leges et pro umbra regis Romanum ius victis impositurum, chapter 6. The misfortune was, says the translator, quotes open, the one was impatient of a rival, and the other could not endure a superior. And Paetus, who ought to have contented himself in being second to Corbulo, ever took pleasure to diminish the glory of his actions, upbraiding him that his victory in taking of towns was imaginary, without conquest or plunder, that he would impose laws and demand contributions, introduce the Roman power in the place of their knights, and render them a mere shadow, quotes closed. He often seems to be without the least glimmering of Tacitus' meaning, or any meaning, and puts down a parcel of words at random. How clearly does he English, provisis exemplis Claudinae ac numantina Claudis, quotes open, resolving to follow the example of Numantian and the Claudine defeat, which practice they thought they might justify, since the Parthians were at this time more powerful than the Carthaginians or the Samnites, quotes closed, bracket open. Were they in truth? What a discovery is here, bracket closed. Neque eandem vim santibus Italico populo aut poenis Romani imperii aemulis. He goes on, they were now beginning to talk that the ancients were always commended for their address in suiting all things to the times, and securing a safe retreat when fortune should frown upon them. This is another discovery which he has made from these words, validam quoque et laudatam antiquatem, quotiens fortuna contra darit saluti consuluisse, chapter 13. That is, quotes open, these same venerable ancients, so very stubborn and invincible, and so much adored, always consulted self-preservation as often as pressed by the assaults of a calamitous fortune, quotes closed. When Paetus had submitted to such shameful conditions from the Parthians, he, amongst the rest, made a bridge over the river Arsanius, and to hide his disgrace, pretended it was to shorten his own march, when in truth it was done in obedience to the commands of the Parthians, as a monument of their superiority and conquest. Namque iis usi fuit nostri per diversum iera, chapter 15, quotes open. It being commodious to them, quoth the translator, and not in any manner to molest us, quotes closed, were ever two meanings more remote. He often adds words of his own to those of Tacitus, and often drops many more of the original, sometimes whole sentences. Tacitus says, there prevailed then a pestilent custom of making fraudulent adoptions, such as candidates for office as had no children of their own, and as soon as the election was over, they instantly dismissed such as they had occasionally adopted. This abuse raised a storm from such as were real parents, who, having applied to the Senate with warm representations against such fallacious dealings in others, and such injury done to themselves, add, sibi promissa legum diu expectata, in ludibrium verti, quando quis sine solicitudine parens, sine loctu orbis longa patrum vota repente adaequeret, chapter 19. All this is dropped by the translator, and the following jargon of his own inserted. They took children to quit them at their fancy in contempt of those laws, while they had a great many privileges for care or sorrow, the other with ease enjoyed the same. Quotes closed. I am afraid I have tired my reader, as I have done myself, with such a dull deduction of stupidities. I did not at first intend to say anything of the former translations. I took it for granted that every man who had seen them must have condemned them, and found them as pitiful and bad as they really are. But when, upon publishing my proposals, I found that some who by their titles and profession should be learned, others who by their high quality ought to have taste and elegance, had commended the former translation, and uttered their despair of seeing a better, I found it necessary to give some account of that performance, which I think to be as low, defective, and wretched as anything in print, neither language nor sense nor decency, and as much unlike Tacitus the historian as the meanest slave of Tacitus the consul was unlike his master. It is much worse than the old translation, which is exceeding bad. It is in my own defense, as well as in defense of Tacitus, that I have censured it, and against my inclination. It looks indeed as if the translators themselves had no opinion of it, since they have not, as is usual, said one word about it by way of preface. This is what Mr. Dryden particularly never used to omit doing. Why did he omit it now in the translation of a work of such name and weight? As far as the sixth annal, there is a translation, too, of Lahoussaye's notes, but done with great ignorance and errors. End of Discourse 1. Read by Father Ziley of Detroit, Michigan, December 2007.
Section 2 of the Complete Works of Tacitus, edited by Thomas Gordon. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Graham Redman. The Complete Works of Tacitus, to which are prefixed political discourses upon that author, edited and translated by Thomas Gordon, with introductory essays by Thomas Gordon. Volume 1. Discourse 2. Upon Tacitus and His Writings, Part 1. Section 1. The Character of Tacitus. As to the character of Tacitus and his writings, he was the greatest orator, statesman, and historian of his time. He had long frequented the bar. He had passed through all the high offices of state. He was aedile, praetor, consul. And after long acquaintance with business and men, he applied himself to collect observations and to convey the fruits of his knowledge to posterity under the agreeable dress of a history. For this task he was excellently qualified. No man had seen more. Scarce any man had ever thought so much, or conveyed his thoughts with greater force and vivacity. A mighty genius, for which no conception or design was too vast, a powerful orator who abounds in great sentiments and description, yet a man of consummate integrity, who, though he frequently agitates the passions, never misleads them. A masterly historian who draws events from their first sources, and explains them with a redundancy of images and a frugality of words. A profound politician who takes off every disguise and penetrates every artifice. An upright patriot zealous for public liberty and the welfare of his country, and a declared enemy to tyrants and to the instruments of tyranny. A lover of humankind, a man of virtue, who adores liberty and truth, and everywhere adorns and recommends them, who abhors falsehood and iniquity, despises little arts, exposes bad ones, and shows upon all occasions, by the fate and fall of great wicked men, by the anxiety of their souls, by the precariousness of their power, by the uncertainty or suddenness of their fate, what a poor price greatness obtained is for goodness lost, and how infinitely persecuted virtue is preferable to smiling and triumphant wickedness. Germanicus, under all his hardships and disfavour, is a happier man than Tiberius with all his power and empire, happier in peace of mind, happier in his fame and memory. Tigellinus is a great favourite with Nero, but detested by all the rest of the world and fearful of all men. Seneca is disliked by the emperor, but universally beloved and regretted. Tacitus is a fine gentleman who suffers nothing pedantic or low, nothing that is trifling or indecent to fall from his pen. He is also a man of wit, not such a one as is fond of conceits and the quaintness of words, but a wit that is grave, majestic, and sublime, one that blends the solemnity of truth with the fire of imagination and touches the heart rather than the fancy. Yet for the better reception of truth pleases and awakens the fancy. The telling of truth is dry and unaffecting, but to enliven it with imagery is describing it, and every one knows the advantages that description has over bare narration. Hence the force of fine painting, though in my opinion the orator has the advantage of the painter, as words can multiply ideas better than the pencil, throw them thicker together, and inflame them more. What piece of Apelles could have animated the Athenians against Philip of Macedon like one of Demosthenes's orations? What picture of love can equal the description of that passion by Lucretius, the noblest wit of all the Latin poets? It is hardly, I believe, possible for colours to carry images higher than they are by Michelangelo carried in his piece of The Last Day, yet I believe it not only possible, but easy, to make a description of that day more affecting than the sight of that celebrated piece. Section 2. How much he excels in description and force. Painting in words is the strongest painting, and in that art Tacitus excels to amazement. His images are many, but close and thick, his words are few, but pointed and glowing, and even his silence is instructive and affecting. How justly does he represent that noble sullenness and disdain of the wife of Arminius when brought with other captives before Germanicus? Inerent et feminae nobiles, intercourse uxor Arminii, eodemque filia segestis, mariti magis quam parentis animo, neque victa in lacrimas, neque voce supplex, compressis intra sinum manibus gravidum uterum intuens. A circumstance of distress more moving than this last could not be devised, and what words or exclamations or tears could raise compassion so effectually as the representation of a spirit too great to weep or complain, of a grief too mighty to be uttered. The march of Germanicus and his army to the forest of Teutberg, to bury the bones of Verus and his legions there massacred by the Germans, the description of that camp, with the revival of the circumstances of that tragical event, and the sympathy and resentments of the soldiers are all beautifully displayed with great force and brevity, with equal tenderness and horror. Per moto ad miserationem omni qui aderat exercitu, ob propinquos, amicos, denique ob casus bellorum et sortem hominum. Incadunt moistos locos, visuque ac memoria deformes, prima vari castra lato ambitu et dimensis principiis trium legionum manus ostentabant, dein semiruto valo humili fossa acquisae iam reliquiae concedisi intelegebantur. Medio campi albentia ossa, ut fugerant, ut restiterant disjecta vel agerata. Adjacebant fragmina taelorum equorumque artus, simul truncis arborum antifixa ora. Lucis propinquis barbarae arae, apud quas tribunos ac primorum ordinum centuriones mactaverant. Claudius eius superstites pugnam aut vincula elepsi referebant hic cecidisi legatos illic raptas aquilas primum ubi vulnus varo ad actum ubi infelice dextra et suo ictu mortem invenerit, quo tribunali concionatus Arminius, quot patibula captivis quae scrobes, utque signis et aquilis per superbiam inlucerit. Igitur Romanus qui aderat executus, sextum post Claudis annum, trium legionum ossa, nullo noscenti alienas reliquias ansuorum humo tegeret, omnes ut conjunctos ut consanguineos aucta in hostem era moisti simul et infensi condebant. Here is eloquence and description. What can be added, what can be taken away? His style is everywhere warm and pathetic, and he never informs the understanding or entertains the imagination, but he kindles the affections. You are not only convinced by his sentiments, but governed by them, charmed with them, and grow zealous for them. This is a trial of the power and skill of a writer, this the drift and glory of persuasion and eloquence, and this the talent of Tacitus. To display tyrants and tyranny he chooses the strongest words and figures. Facinora ac flagitia sua, ipsi quoque in supplicium verterant. Si recludantur tyrannorum mentes, posse adspici laniatus et ictus. Quando ut corpora verberibus, itus aevitia libidine, malis consultis animus dilaceretur. Quippe Tiberium non fortuna non solitudines protegebant, qui in tormenta pectoris suasque ipsi poenas fateretur. It was his business and design to lay open the iniquity and horrors of their misrule. Saeva jussa, continuas accusationes, fallaces amicitias, perniciem innocentium. You see the bloody hands of the executioners, Rome swimming in the blood of her own citizens, and all the rage of unrelenting tyranny, undantem per domos sanguinem, aut manus carnificum. You see the bands of accusers let loose, nay, hired to destroy, and breathing death and exile. Saevitiam oratorum accusationes minitentium, delatores per primia elliciebantur. You see the barbarous outrages of an insolent and merciless soldiery. Cuncta sanguine ferro flammisque miscent. You see madmen bear rule. These mad rulers governed and made worse by slaves, villains, and harlots. Yet all these monsters adored, their persons, wickedness, and even their fury sanctified. Iniquity exalted, virtue trod underfoot, laws perverted, righteousness and truth depressed and banished, every worthy man doomed to scaffolds, rocks, and dungeons, the basest of all men pronouncing that doom and making a prey or a sacrifice of the best, fear and distrust and treachery prevailing, the destroyers themselves haunted with the perpetual dread of destruction, at last overtaken by it, yet seldom leaving better in their room. All these melancholy scenes you see exposed in colours strong and moving. The thoughts are great, the phrase elevated, and the words chaste and few. It is all a picture. Whatever he says, you see, and all that you see affects you. It puzzles one to give instances, because there are so many in every page. How many affecting images are there in these few words near the beginning of the first annal? Quotus quisque reliquus qui rem publicam videset. How mournful too and expressive, yet how plain are these which immediately follow. Igitur verso civitatis statu, nihil usquam prisci et integri moris, as well as those a little before, rebus novis aucti tuta et praesentia, quam vetera et periculosa malent. With what thunder and vehemence does Arminius rouse the Cheruscans, his countrymen, to arms, when his wife became a captive to the Romans and his child a slave, though yet unborn. Egregium patrem, magnanimum imperatorem, fortem exercitum, quorum tot manus unam mulierculam avexerint. Sibi tres legiones, totidem legatos procobuisi, non enim se proditione neque adversus feminas gravidas, sed palam adversus amatos bellum tractare. Cerni ad hoc germanorum in lucis signa romana, coleret segestes victam ripam, rederet filio sacerdotium, etc. In how few words does he comprise a long and perplexed debate in the council held by Germanicus how to proceed with the mutinous legions? Augebat metum gnarus superior exercitus Romanae seditionis, et si omitteretur ripa invasurus hostis, ac si auxilia et socii adversum abscedentes legiones armarenta, civile bellum suscipi, periculosa severitas, flagitiosa largitio, siu nihil militi, siu omnia concederenta, in ancipiti res publica, igitur, etc. Section 3. Further instances of the justness of his genius and of his great thoughts. His account of the persecutions of Germanicus, with his last words and amiable character, makes a fine tragedy. So does the death of Seneca. So does that of the conspirators against Nero. With what magnanimity and calmness does Sulpicius Asper, the centurion, answer the brutal tyrant when asked why he had conspired against his life. Non eliter tot flagitiis eius subveniri potuisi. With what silence and firmness did the consul Vestinus die, though he was Nero's old companion and friend, and unconcerned in the conspiracy, and no crime nor accuser against him. Vigens ad hoc balneo infertur, calidar aqua mersatur, nulla edita voce quas se miseraretur. How beautiful, how deep and just are his observations upon human nature. Moles in calamitate humani animi. Mobiles ad superstitionem perculsae semel mentes. Cupidine in genii humani lubentius obscura credi. Neque morum spernendus, nisi quod palpitatem praecipuum malorum credebat. vivorum ut magna admiratio, iter censura difficilis. Eandem virtutem admirantibus qui irascebantur. Manebat admiratio viri et fama, sed odorant. Beneficia eo usque lighter sunt dum videntur exsolvi posse. Obe multum anticessere pro gratia odium reditor. Exacto per scelera die novissimum malorum fuit laetitia. Rumore populi qui neminem sine aemulo sinit. Minore spe veniae crescit vinculum sceleris. Populus novarum rerum cupiens pavidusque. Vulgus eadem pravitate interfectum insectatur, qua viventem foverat. Hamasterly and profound are those upon government. Primas dominandis pays in arduo. Ubisis ingressus ad esse studia et ministros. Arduum eodem loci potentiam et concordiam esse. Potentia cautis consiliis tutius habetur. Maior elonginquo reverentia. Principibus praecipua rerum ad famam dirigendo. Insociabile regnum. Cupido regni fratre et filia potior. Scarum cui implacabilius irascebatur Tiberius silentio tramisit. Intellegebantur artes, sed pars obsequii in eo ne deprehenderentur. In summa fortuna aequius quod validius. These I do not quote as the finest thoughts in Tacitus, but only such as occur to me. He paints thoughts and faculties, men and passions, tyranny and slaves. His imagination is boundless, yet never outruns his judgment. His wisdom is solid and vast, yet always enlivened by his imagination. His designing is great, his drawing just, his colouring beautiful. See the description of a pestilence at Rome. Domius corporibus exanimis itinera funeribus complebantur. Non sexus, non aetas periculo vacua. Servitia perinde ac ingenua plebes raptim extingui, inter conjugum et liberorum lamenta, qui dum accident, dum deflent, saepe eodem rogo crema bantur. Equitum senatorum quae interitus quamvis promiscui minus flabiles erant, tanquam commune mortalitate saevitiam principis praevenierent. Under a tyrant a plague was a blessing. Who but Tacitus could have said, as he does of the ancient Germans, Argentum et aurum propitii an irati dii negaverint dubito, or that afterwards of the same people, Mira diversitate naturae, cum iidem homines sic ament inertiam quietem odorint, or that of the Sitones, a particular clan of Germans, who were under the government of a woman, intentum non modo a libertate, sed etiam a servitute degenerant. These are such instances of discernment, sagacity, and happy expression as few writings can show. By them, and a thousand more, it is manifest that Tacitus saw everything in a true and uncommon light, and his reflections are like mirrors where human nature and government are exhibited in their proper size and colours. I cannot help thinking that, to be a bold and gallant saying of Boiocalus to the Roman general, who refused him a mansion for himself and his people in the vacant lands of Frisia, and thence provoked him to implore the sun and stars. Quasi coram interrogabat, Valentne contueri inane solum, potius mare superfunderent adversus terrarum ereptores, deesse nobis terram in qua vivamus, in qua moriamur non potest. What a sublime thought is that of his concerning the Fenians, the most savage and wretched race this of all the wild Germans, their clothing, skins, their bed, the earth, their food, the grass, destitute of horses, houses, and arms, the thick branches of trees their only shelter against tempests and the ravening beasts. Here they find cradles and protection for their babes, here live the old men, and hither resort the young. Yet this miserable life they prefer to that of sweating at the plough, and to the pains of rearing houses. They thirst not after the fortunes of others, they have no anxiety about preserving their own, so that they hoped for nothing that was not theirs, and having nothing of their own could fear to lose nothing. Securi, says Tacitus, adversus homines, securi adversus deus, rem difficilimam ad securi sunt, ut illis ne voto quidem opus sit. Section 4. The Morality of Tacitus and His Spirit Virtuous and Humane. As obvious, too, as his other great qualities, is his love of mankind, of civil liberty, and of private and public virtue. His book is a great tablature of the ugliness and horrors of tyranny, of the scandal and infamy of servitude and debasement, of the loveliness of virtue and a free spirit, of the odiousness of vice and sycophancy. Such was his sympathy for the sufferings and severe lot of the Romans under Tiberius, that he is glad of a digression from home, and keeps thence as long as he can to relieve his soul from attending to domestic evils. Duabus aestatibus gesta conjunxi, quo requiescaret animus a domesticis malis. He grieves for the slavish spirit, for the stupid tameness of the Romans under the tyranny of the detestable Nero. So much Roman blood wantonly shed by that monster is a load upon his soul and oppresses it with sorrow. Patientia servilis, tantumque sanguinis domi perditum, fatigant animum et maestitia restringunt. He delights in good times, in public liberty and virtuous reigns, and delights to praise them, such as those of Nerva and Trajan. Rara temporum felicitate, ubi sentire quae velis, et quae sentias dicere licet. In what a different strain does he speak of the foregoing emperors! Nobilitas opes omissi gestique honores pro crimine, et ob virtutes certissimum exitium. He glories, however, that the worst and most faithless times produced many instances of friendship and generous fidelity. Non tamen adio virtutum sterile saeculum, ut non et bona exempla prodiderit. He is fond of a virtuous character, as that of Labeo, Labeo incorrupta libertate et ob id fama celebratior, such as that of Lepidus. Hunc ego Lepidum temporibus illis gravem et sapientem virum fuisse comperio, nam plerequi absaevis adulationibus aliorum in melius flexit. And that of Lucius Piso, chief pontiff. Nullius servilis sententiae sponte auctor. How amiable are the death and last words of Lucius Arruntius, like those of a patriot and a prophet! But how vile everywhere, and even miserable and insecure, are tyrants, flatterers, and the ministers of iniquity! What he says of the first I have quoted above, and against the other hear his honest indignation. Tempora infecta et adulatione sordida fuere, fideaque et nimia censerent, adulatio perinde anceps si nulla et ubi nimia est. Delatores genus hominum in exitium publicum repertum perniciem aliis ac postremo sibi in venere. What an odious insect is Vatinius, what a horrible villain Tigellinus, what infamous sycophants are Capito and Vitellius, and what a shocking parricide is Serenus, the accuser of his father and a general accuser. Section 5. The style of Tacitus, how pertinent and happy, his obscurity a charge of the moderns only. Besides the grandeur and dignity of his phrase, he is remarkable for a surprising brevity. But let his words be ever so few, his thought and matter are always abundant. His expression is like the dress of Papia Sabina, described by himself, velata parte oris ne satiaret aspectum, vel quia sic decebat. He starts the idea and leaves the imagination to pursue it. The sample he gives you is so fine that you are presently curious to see the whole piece, and then you have your share in the merit of the discovery, a compliment which some able writers have forgot to pay to their readers. I cannot help thinking Mr. Locke a great deal too wordy, and that the plainness of his propositions, as well as their strength, suffers often by an explanation over diffuse. Dr. Tillotson's style is much better, indeed very fine, but takes up too much room. It is likely he chose it as fit for popular discourses, since it is plain from the vivacity of his parts and the many fine turns found in his writings that he could have been very sententious. These two great names are by no man reverenced more than I reverence them, and without malignity I mention them, as I do that of the worthy Lord Clarendon, whose language is weighty and grave, but encumbered and even darkened, I might say flattened, with a multiplication of words. Style is a part of genius, and Tacitus had one peculiar to himself, a sort of a language of his own, one fit to express the amazing vigour of his spirit and that redundancy of reflections which, for force and frequency, are to be equalled by no writer before or since. Besides, the course and fluency of his narration is almost everywhere broken by persons whom he introduces speaking and debating, insomuch that a great part of his history comes out of the mouths of other people, and in expressions suitable to their several characters. It is plain, too, that the older he grew, the more he pruned and curtailed his style, for his histories are much more copious and flowing than his annals, and thus what has been by others reckoned a fault was in him the effect of his judgment. Neither were his works intended for the populace, but for such as governed states, or such as attended to the conduct of governors. Nor were the style and Latin ever so plain, would they ever be understood by such as do not. As Plutarch came to understand the Roman tongue by understanding their affairs, Tacitus is to be known by knowing human nature and the elements and mechanism of government. It is madness to wish for the manner and redundancy of Livy in the writings of Tacitus. They wrote at different times and of governments differently formed. Tacitus had transactions of another sort to describe, and other sorts of men, for by government men are changed. The crooked arts of policy, the false smiles of power, the jealousy, fury, and wantonness of princes uncontrolled, the flattery of the grandees, the havoc made by the accusers, and universal debasement of all men, matter chiefly for reflection, complaints, and rebuke. Nobis in arto et inglorious labor, moistae urbis res, etc. Livy had another field and more scope. The history of a commonwealth rising, forming, and conquering, perpetual victories and matter of panegyric, and his pen flowed like the prosperity of the state. In gentia bella, ex pugnationes urbium, fusos captosque reges, discordias consulum adversus tribunos, agrarias frumentarias qui leges, plebis et optimatium catamina, libero egressu memorabant. Doubtless he could have adopted another style if he would, perhaps the style of Livy, as I think this very quotation shows, but Tacitus had another view and different topics. Nor would another style, the easy and numerous style of Livy, have answered his purpose. I fancy, too, that nobody who knows Tacitus would wish him to have written in a strain different from what he has done. There are charms in his manner and words, as well as in his thoughts, and he wears the only dress that would become him. It is amazing that this obscurity of his should never be mentioned by any of the ancients who mention him. It is a fault discovered by the moderns, though, in my opinion, common to him with other classical writers. Nor has he puzzled the commentators more than Horace, Cicero, Pliny, Sallust, etc. His Latin is truly pure and classical. He has few or no words which had not been used by approved writers, nor does he often give new ideas to old words. If his works were nowise obscure to men of sense when he composed them, as we have no reason to think, it is insolence and folly in us to reckon his obscurity a fault. It is a dead language which he writes in, and he wrote 1700 years ago. When Tacitus the emperor directed copies of his books to be placed in all the libraries, and for their better preservation to be transcribed 10 times every year, he ordered no grammarian to explain his abstruse places, though the historian had been then dead near 200 years. Great writers are in their manner and phrase a law and authority to themselves, and not confined to the rules that fill the heads or grammars of small wits and pedants. Milton has a style of his own, and rules for writing of his own, and who that tastes his genius would wish him more fashionable and exact, or to have written otherwise? I am even pleased with the jarrings of Milton's phrases, but here I chiefly mean his poetical style. Of his prose I shall make mention hereafter. When the subject varies, so should the style. That of Tacitus is marvellously suited to his subject and design. Had it been more familiar, it had neither been so just nor so beautiful. To me nothing is more so than the manner of Tacitus. His words and phrases are admirably adapted to his matter and conceptions, and make impressions sudden and wonderful upon the mind of man. The doleful condition of the Emperor Vitellius when deserted by his fortune and all men is strong and tragical as imagination and words can make it. Teret solitudo et tacentes loci, tentat clausa, in horrescit vacuis, fessusque misero errore, et pudenda latebra semet occultans, a tribuno protrahitur. Vincti pone tergum manus, leniata veste, faidum spectaculum duce batur, multis in crepantibus, he adds, nullo in lacrimante. And the reason he gives for this is judicious and fine. Deformitas exitus misericordiam abstulerat. What follows is in the same affecting strain, as are the first sensible approaches of his calamity. Vitellius capta urbe, Aventinum in domum uxoris, cellula defertur, ut si diem latebra vitaviset, terracinem perfugeret. Deen mobilitate ingenii et quae natura pavoris est, cum omnia metuenti praesentia maxime displicerent, impellatium regreditur, vastum desertumque, dilapsis etiam infimis servorum, aut occursum eius declinentibus. Who would blame Tacitus for a paucity of words when he conveys so many images in so few? Is habitus animorum fuit, ut pessimum facinus auderent pauci, plures velent, omnes paterentur. Where can there be a happier expression than that concerning Galba, when the empire was already rent from him, and he knew it not? Ignarus interim Galba et sacris intentus, fatigabat alieni jam imperii deos. When Otho, proclaimed emperor by no more than 23 soldiers, was advancing to the camp, et paucitate salutantium trepidus. The behaviour and acquiescence of those he met in his way are accounted for with surprising brevity and justness. Alii conscientia, plerique miraculo, pars clamore et gladiis, pars silentio, animum ex eventu sumpturi. There is infinite pathos in what he says of the omens and phenomena which were observed during the civil wars and the strife of princes. Coelo terraque prodigia, et fulminum monitus, et futurorum praesagia lighta, tristia, ambigua, manifesta. What can be more solemn, sounding, and sublime, even in Lucretius? When Nero was disgracing himself and the Roman state by debasing his person to that of a player upon the public stage, how pathetically is the behaviour and spirit of Burrus described in a few words. Ad starbat Burrus mirens et laudans. Section 6. A general character of his works. There is no end of specimens and examples. It is all over a wonderful book, full of wisdom, full of virtue, of astonishing strokes of genius and superior sense. Yet he seems not to value himself upon his great thoughts. The finest things fall from him like common things. He says them naturally, and never dwells upon one, because he has always more to utter. When he has struck your imagination, and you want to stand still and ruminate, you have no time. He draws, or rather forces, you forward, and the next thought strikes you as much. So does the third, and all of them, and you go on reading and wondering, yet wishing for leisure to ponder and recollect. But he gives you none, for from first to last the present reflection is always the best. 'Tis all of it eternal good sense, and will bear an eternity of time and censure. It is no wise akin to your pretty trifles of humour and fancy that just tickle the imagination, but go no deeper, and please for a day. His beauties are solid, and upon the strictest examination discover no paint or tinsel. His wisdom and instruction are inexhaustible, and his works consequently an everlasting feast. I have seen several performances of tolerable length and notable reputation, all derived from so many short sentences of Tacitus, well wire-drawn and paraphrased. He is indeed a fund for writers who have discretion and style, but want depth. There is a fine short character of Tacitus in Owen's epigrams. Veracem fecit probitas, natura segacem, obscurum brevitas te, gravitasque brevem. Section 7. Tacitus vindicated from the imputation of deriving events from counsels too subtle and malevolent. He is accused, too, of overmuch subtlety and refining, and of deriving the actions of his princes, even the most innocent and plausible, from crooked designs and a base heart, and of imputing to craft and politics what was often no more than the effect of inclination and passion. A charge, in my opinion, entirely groundless. Tacitus describes things and men as they are, shows particulars acting agreeably to their characters, their situation and views, and represents counsels flowing from such sources only as were likely to produce them. Let us examine his reign of Tiberius, for which he is chiefly censured. The first feat of this reign was the murder of Agrippa, the grandson of Augustus. Tiberius ordered it and denied it, and threatened the centurion who was the executioner that he should answer for it to the Senate. This is the account given by Tacitus, and the same is given by Suetonius. The former adds that it was done from jealousy of state and for the removal of a rival. And what other reason is to be given? For he had shown how improbable it was that the same had been ordained by Augustus, though this was pretended, as Suetonius too testifies. Nor was anything more natural than his apprehensions of Germanicus, a young prince popular above all men, and at the head of a great army, who wanted him for their emperor in the room of Tiberius. This is matter of fact, and well attested. Now, where is the extreme refining to represent Tiberius as contriving to remove such a dangerous man, one of such good pretences and powerful interest, first from his faithful legions, and then from home, for ever? Though at the same time he flattered him, extolled him, and heaped honours upon him. All this is but the common road of such courts, when they have the same designs and fears. Is it not usual in Turkey to load a bashaw with imperial presents, to bestow upon him some great government, and to murder him before he arrive at it? Is not power a jealous and artificial thing, full of fears and wiles? And is not Tiberius allowed by all men to have been a prince of infinite distrust, craft, and cruelty? What meant he by making great men governors of provinces, and yet never suffering them to go thither for a course of years, nor even out of Rome, though they still held the name? What meant he by continuing others in the actual possession of provinces for a long tract of years, nay, frequently to the end of their life? Was it not his distrust of the former, and that as to the latter he could not make a safer choice, and therefore was afraid to choose any? Yet Tacitus, far from diving into his politics in this matter, or being subtle and dogmatical about it, gives you the sentiments of others. Alii taedio novae curae, semel placita pro aeternis servavisse, quidam invidia ne plures fruerentur. Sunt qui estimant, ut calidum eius ingenium, ita anxium judicium. Neque enim eminentis virtutes sectabatur, et rursum vitia oderat. Ex optimis periculum sibi, a pessimis de decus publicum metuebat. Never was anything said more impartial, never anything more just and solid. From the doubles and even contradictions that possess the heart of man, the conduct of men will be perplexed and contradictory. It is allowed that alieni appetens sui profusus was a just branch in the character of Catiline, and is reckoned one of the beauties and strong places in Sallust. Without peradventure, as beautiful and strong and just, is this of Tacitus. Neque eminentis virtutis sectabatur, et rursum vitia oderat. The reason, too, assigned for it is equally just and fine. ex optimis periculum sibi a pessimis de decus publicum metuebat. Is not this accounting from the principles of nature and self-preservation for the conduct and politics of Tiberius? Many of his actions and measures recounted by Tacitus are supported by collateral evidence by Suetonius, Pliny, Dion Cassius, and others. Many by them omitted are by him related with such probability and so perfectly resemble the rest of his conduct that we must deny Tiberius to have been such a prince as all men agree he was, or believe the account of him given by Tacitus. His dissimulation was constant and notorious. In the very beginning, while he confidently acted as emperor with all the pomp and might of majesty, he openly refused the empire. Principatum, says Suetonius, quam vis neque occupare confestim, neque agere dubitasit, vi et specie dominationis assumpta, diu tamen recusavit impudentissimo animo. Such severe language as this is not given him by Tacitus. Does Tacitus represent him as hating and fearing the great Romans and illustrious senators? And do not other historians, do not the facts themselves prove it? Was he not continually destroying them till they were almost all destroyed? Of the 20 grandees, particularly Principum Civitatis, whom he desired of the Senate for his confidence and counsellors, he left not above 2 or 3 alive. All the rest were by treachery and feigned crimes cut off by him. Horum omnium vix duos aut tres in columnes praestitit, caeteros alium alia de causa perculit, says Suetonius. Is Tacitus therefore too refined in discovering what facts demonstrate? Is it not Suetonius too who says, multa specie gravitatis ac morum corrigendorum, sed magis naturae obtemperans saive et atrociter factitavit? It was usual with him to do actions exceeding barbarous and merciless, yet all under show of justice and the reforming of manners, but in reality from the instigation of his own cruel spirit. Is Suetonius also over-subtle, the historian in the world the most plain, and seldom aiming at a reflection? For what reason did he suffer the boundaries of the empire to be invaded and provinces to be seized by the barbarians, but from fear of trusting any great officer with the conduct of the war? That he affected to derive all power from the Senate, yet left them but the shadow of authority, and was even jealous of that shadow, is sacredly true. It was even natural, and wanted no reasoning to discover it. Did not Cromwell do the same? And are not all men willing to have their power, however lawless, legitimated, and the odium of their acts of violence transferred upon others? Will any one say that the Senate liked his acts of sovereignty, his frequent impeachments of their members, often the best and most innocent, and his obliging them to condemn, for he that dares not refuse is forced to consent, and his leaving every particular in continual dread of being the next, which was a farther motive in each to hatred and complaisance? He knew he had earned their hate. Reputante sibi publicum odium. Is it likely now that he loved them, or that there was or could be sincerity or confidence on either side? What did his retirement in the Isle of Capreae, with his perpetual absence from Rome, infer, but continual distrust of the Senate and people? Just before he expired, he was hastening from a ramble upon the continent back to his den. Non temere quidquam nisi ex tuto ausurus. To take measures of vengeance against the Senate, for that he had read in their acts that they had discharged certain persons accused, though he had writ to the Senate, that they were only named by the informer. Pro contempto se habitum fremens, repetere caprias quoque modo destinavit, non temere, etc. This, too, is related by Suetonius. It is certain the Senate were to all these tyrants a constant mark of jealousy and hate, and some of them, particularly Caligula and Nero, had proposed to extirpate that venerable assembly by murdering the whole body. End of Discourse 2, Part 1.
Unlock big savings while adding style and security to your home with Schlage door locks from Menards. High-quality Schlage Wi-Fi compatible entry locks allow you to lock and unlock your home from anywhere with your phone. Get peace of mind and save big money on all door locks at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.